to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams and Sandy the Music today.
Yeah, Miss Otis regrets she can't come to lunch. That was the Mills Brothers. I'm just, Cole Porter wrote this thing, and just about everybody took a crack at it from their own angle. And so that's what we're listening to.
So I wanted to talk for a moment about the fact that Joe Biden has made a unilateral decision to hold up the arms shipments to Israel, and not the defensive arms shipments, meaning whatever it is they need for their Iron Dome and their Iron Shield. Defensive weapons are still getting through, but the offensive weapons, i.e. 2,000-pound bombs, 1,400-pound bombs that Israel wants and needs to move forward with their assault on
Rafah.
And President Biden has made this decision, and he's suffering fallout from some Democrats, from some Republicans, and so young people are saying he's doing this because the more he's watched these protests, again, I had a young man on yesterday who is kind of like the leader of the encampment at UWM, and we had a really engaging conversation on yesterday, and he made it clear that they were not going to support President Joe Biden, and that it was too late. There was nothing that Joe Biden could do to have many of these young people vote for him. And I said to him, are you aware that Donald Trump has said to Netanyahu, if he was president, Donald Trump said, I would say, finish the job. But Sandy, here is Joe Biden, who is caught between a rock and a hard place, clearly. He's now being accused of turning his back on our ally. I think that that's ridiculous. Joe Biden has supported Israel throughout all of this. For the most part, economically and with military weapons. To say that he now has turned his back on Israel, I think is a misnomer at best.
Well, you know, this is the definition of a rock and a hard spot politically, and anyone who would be president now would face a difficult decision because there are those in the world who want to address as the first level of concern the plight of the Palestinians in this situation where they're locked into this small part of Gaza and imprisoned essentially by their own leadership, Hamas, and under siege from Israel in Israel's effort to get rid of Hamas, with all sorts of collateral damage being the result. And then there are those who are first and foremost focused on Israel. And the need to make sure that Israel is in a position to defend itself. There's also American political issues involved. I think that we have to understand that there are those on the Republican side who would like nothing more than to separate Democrats from the Jewish support that they have normally received. And for those people, the Palestinian plight and the fact that students are taking it up and the fact that there are those on the liberal side who are supporting the Palestinians is something that then can be exploited politically. And that exploitation is obviously going on. There are those on the right who are wanting to exploit the fact that the Democrats are not unified with respect to having a singular interest with respect to the Israel-Palestinian issue. I think the issue there is complex, and I think the position that Joe Biden is taking is the one that he thinks is probably the right position to take. It is on the left that most of the support for the Palestinians is coming, and he's experiencing pressure from that side. But he has been, over his career, I think, very clearly in direct support for Israel and the defense of Israel. I think what's happened is that Netanyahu has taken Israel in a direction that makes it more difficult to be that singular about it, number one. Number two, I think that, there has long and been a bipartisan position in the United States that a two-state solution is needed in order to solve the problem that exists in Israel with respect to the Palestinians. That is at the basis of all of this. And I think Netanyahu's intransigence about not having a two-state solution is in the background here.
So how much damage, Sandy, because Benjamin Netanyahu clearly stated, with or without the support of America, we are going into Rafah. And we are going to certainly do what we set out to do. Is there some, you know, to defy the president of the United States? Is there some long-term implications?
Well, I mean, I think
as long as Netanyahu is president.
Well, I think so. I think there is that long-term issue with respect to. But I think the main thing here is that Israel really didn't need this in order to carry out the Rafah attack. And I think that was clear. And I think Biden even conceded that what we were withholding from them was probably not vital to their capacity to move forward. And Netanyahu is proving that by moving forward. I think that in large part, what Biden was left with was the symbolic need to do something here. And so symbolically, he's withholding in the near term these offensive weapons. I'm sure that the bulk of the military aid that is provided by Congress to Israel is defensive. That Iron Dome is a very expensive thing to maintain, and I think most of the aid is in support of that kind of defensory. But so what's going on? I think most of this has to do with domestic politics, quite frankly. And I think that the last thing in the world, really, that Israel wants is to be the subject of partisan politics in the United States. It has avoided that for a long time, and it is Mr. Netanyahu himself who has started it when he came to Congress and spoke only to Republicans the last time he visited.
So does this have, in your opinion, again, does this have some consequences in the election for President Joe Biden, the decision that was made?
Well, I mean, the problem is that this presidential election is going to be sliver thin in terms of the victory either way, so that anything that is sliver sized in terms of having an impact could have an impact on the election. So yes, the rock and the hard spot that Joe Biden is in is going to be have a sliver effect on the kind of vote that he gets. And I think that he understands that. And I think the Republicans understand that as well. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Republicans are playing up the campus unrest and the whole issue associated with support for Palestine, because they want to paint that as being a Democratic activity.
So let me ask you, you and I have seen a lot of different elections. This one, and there have always been conflict between Democrats and Republicans, but this one stands out kind of more so than most. And you can go back to, you know, those terse debates and arguments in the 60s and the 50s. But Sandy, something about this one just won't allow there to be any rest. It's like every second is tense, and every move that's being made is like chess. And you're just, man, what is going to be the outcome of this thing?
Well, you know, I think it all started with an ad, a famous ad that was run during the Goldwater Johnson campaign, in which there was an atomic bomb that went off, and it was the Johnson position was that Barry Goldwater was dangerous because he would take us to the brink of annihilation. It would be potentially the end of the country. And I think that's the kind of rhetoric we have now. Both sides are arguing that if you elect the other side, that's the end of America as we know it. We don't see that very often. We haven't seen that often in the past, where it's essentially apocalyptic kind of brinksmanship on both sides. Both sides predict apocalypse if the other side gets elected. And that creates, I think, a lot of fear and emotion and divisiveness.
And no clear front runner. And it'll be that way all the way.
Well, I think the deal is that both sides recognize that they need to sell their candidate as the lesser of two evils. And so the only way to do that is to make the other side really evil. I think one side has an easier case to make than the other in that regard. But you can see that that's what's ongoing right now, is that it's going to be a very negative campaign, because I think both sides, I think Biden does have a lot of positives to sell. I don't think the Trump people have any policies that they have available to talk about, so that it's going to be totally related to social issues and negativism.
844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams and you. 844-967-2789. Donald Trump has not picked a VP candidate yet. You got anybody you think is leading?
No, I think he's going to let this hang out for a long time.
He's gonna drag this to the end. Huh? He doesn't want to share the spotlight, does he?
No. Well, I think he likes the idea of people speculating. It's, you can make America great again. You can imagine your own VP candidate as well.
All right, 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. It means Friday's my co-host Sandy Williams and you.
The moment before she died, she lifted up her lovely head and cried, Madam.
Patti LaBelle. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, again, all these great voices.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because this song is a great song. Cole Porter wrote it, and just about everybody that thinks they've got a good voice or knows they have a good voice has made a rendition of it. All because Miss Otis can't make it to lunch. She doesn't survive to lunch if you listen to the end of the song.
Great voices. Well, why didn't I make? Oh, well. Yeah.
I guess we know.
Let's go to Mike from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Mike. You say what, sir? Thank you for the call.
Hey, good morning. Happy Friday to everyone.
Yes, sir.
What a beautiful day to end a week. Yeah, a very simple question, but something that I've been struggling with for weeks now, ever since I heard both the president, a candidate for president of the United States, and his couple of VP potential candidates. How do we allow these people to run for office when they refuse to honor and abide by a certified election result? For the life of me, guys, I don't understand what we're doing here. Even having all these other conversations about the election when the premise, the fundamental, will you agree, Mr. Candidate, that if the certified election results show that you lose, that you will accept the results? I have not heard that from one of the VP candidates from the right, and I sure haven't heard it from Trump. So what are we doing here? We've seen him in 2016. Immediately after he won the election, he spouted about the 3 million or 4 million illegal votes, and it was a bad election, much less the complaining and insinuation of a bad election the last time around. I don't understand why we don't require them to honor the result of a certified election as a prerequisite to being a candidate. What do you think?
You know, I'll say this, and then Sandy can respond. When I read where the question was asked of candidate Donald Trump, and he said, well, if I feel like it was fair, I will honor it, but only based on if I feel like it was fair and equitable, then will I basically, you know, and if it doesn't feel right, then we'll let the people know, and basically he'll give marching orders. I agree with you 100%. Sandy, you want to respond to that?
Well, I think a lot of people who've thought about this deeply will have written about the fact that the peaceful and transition of power is the most fundamental attribute of a democracy. And if you lose that, you've actually lost democracy in its entirety, because all of the tools of democracy are dependent upon the participants in an election abiding by the vote and moving on as indicated by the vote. And we saw in 2020, when people began to play out what could have happened, you begin to realize the complete anarchy, the complete destruction of order that would occur in the circumstance in which the peaceful transition of power is not honored. And to me, it's a terrible foreboding kind of a thing that, number one, Donald Trump is refusing to abide by it, but then we have Tim Scott and others of the vice presidential wannabes who are reciting what it is they think he needs to hear about that very same issue. And I saw Charlie Sykes just yesterday writing about this and saying, look, this is slavish loyalty. This isn't loyalty. This isn't loyalty just to the man and to the Constitution. This is slavish loyalty to the man and himself and to nothing else. And that's a very frightening prospect.
We had a guy on yesterday say, well, you know, 70 million of us are not happy with the way this thing went down. So what are you going to do for us? Well, 70 million of you aren't the majority of the American people. If 70 million of you are angry because of the way things went, then suck it up. This is a majority rule society. Sandy, I thought that's what we were.
Well, in fact, most of the elections for president have been very close. You know, we've had just a couple of landslides where, you know, 49 states, Dukakis lost them, almost all of them. Kerry lost almost all of them. But very few people have carried much more than a scant majority of either the Electoral College or the popular vote. So every election has been marked by a bunch of people who claim to be bitterly disappointed by the outcome. But the fact is that that's the way it works. Okay,
that's the way it works.
That's the way it works.
And so when I heard that, you know, that 70 million or so who aren't going to accept the realities of what all of us have to accept if we're on the other side of this, I'd say put on your big boy pants, because there's only one winner every 4 years. And those of us who are on the other side of it, we act in an adult manner and in accordance with democracy, right? I mean, come on.
Big person pants.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact is that it's only if we can persuade ourselves that the other party is going to destroy America. The fact is the other party has some policies they want to implement that might take the country in a slightly different trajectory. But the fact is that there have only been several presidencies where the country has veered, and those have always been occurrences in which there are extreme circumstances. The Roosevelt presidency, the extreme circumstances of the Depression and then World War II, that's one of the only presidencies where we've veered in a significant direction, the Lincoln presidency with the Civil War. Otherwise, our policy shifts have been moderate, okay? This battleship changes direction only slowly.
Yeah. All right, 844-967-2789. Hang on the lines. We're going to continue the conversation on the other side. Hang on the lines.
Mein Mann ist verhindert, er kann sie unmöglich sehen. Liebste, mein Mann ist verhindert, er kann sie unmöglich sehen. Ach, es tut mir so schrecklich leid.
Yeah, you got the right station.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's Friday, and Sandy, you picked the music again.
It's Short Wave from Berlin. No, this is Cole Porter's Miss Otis Regrets, and that was Marlene Dietrich, a German movie star singer from quite a long time ago, actually, who was very famous for quite a while.
All right. Thank all you guys for hanging on. Let's go to the phone lines. Mary from Wauwatosa. Good morning to you, Mary. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Regarding the very sad emphasis on war and military action in our lives today, I've felt for a long time that as women come to their power in life, it's going to be a more peaceful world. We're going to be celebrating Mother's Day shortly, and I learned from Peace Action Wisconsin that the origin of this day was, it dates back to 1870 in the Mother's Day Proclamation by Julia Ward Howe, I think her name is pronounced, with the important intent that mothers didn't want their sons going off to war. And so on Sunday, let us give some thought to the moms and their children in the Middle East and, the suffering that they're experiencing. I'm sure you're both going to be honoring the women in your lives this Sunday. Thanks, sir.
Mary, always great balance. One thing that, Sandy, we can always count on is for Mary, again, a woman, to bring balance to, the insanity.
Yeah. We have Mother's Day. The rest of the world has Women's Day. I think it's March 8th. I've always thought we should celebrate that as well. Women have played an important role, and I hopefully in the future will play a more important role in bringing a great deal more balance to the way we conduct ourselves.
All right. Let's go to Malik from Racine. Good morning to you, Malik. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, good morning, Earl. Good morning, Sandy. I just wanted to touch on, I heard the conversation last week morning with the protester Amin, and I did hear the show prior, and you talked about Donald Trump and his track record. And one thing that I found kind of refreshing is even the gentleman from Sussex, even though he was a Trumper, he still had the integrity to admit that he's a little slimy. Now, I think that's the thing.
That Trump is a little slimy. Yeah.
even though he was going to still ride with him, he still admitted that he was slimy, which, you know, it's, I guess, a testament to your listeners, or at least having the integrity to admit where they're wrong in certain areas. And I think that's one thing that, you know, that's the problem with Joe Biden is, you know, he's complicit in the murder and the carnage in Israel, or in Gaza, excuse me, that Israel missed out on Gaza. And, you know, maybe me, I'm looking maybe a little bit more optimistic for the future, but that's why we got to vote third party. We got to look at Jill Stein, Cornel West, guys that are not bought. They're not spineless, empty suits who are just, you know, spending their lives trying to play the game of politics and just, you know, make a dollar for their pockets at the expense of our tax dollars.
Hey, Malik, let me ask you, because I also asked Amin this question on yesterday, and, you know, Donald Trump has said that if he was president, he would encourage Netanyahu to finish the job. I don't think we can totally ignore that. I'm not supporting anything that Joe Biden did or didn't do. But your thoughts on the fact that if Trump becomes the president, he clearly it said that Joe Biden, I mean, that Benjamin Netanyahu should finish the job.
Oh, no, 100%. And, you know, the one thing I will say is that even people, maybe not your listeners, don't remember, I know a lot of Palestinians remember, is when Donald Trump was president, he did go to Israel. He did, you know, move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And that was symbolic to show that, you know, the entirety of the West Bank and Jerusalem, it's all for Israel. He wasn't a advocate for Palestinian rights. But, I mean, at one point, he did meet with the president, Mahmoud Abbas. He did criticize Netanyahu, far more critical than, you know, past presidents. Again, we're choosing between two evils, and unfortunately, one evil with Joe Biden, he has the complicit blood of children, you know. So that's where it's kind of, I'm with you, Earl. It's catch 22. You have two bad choices. One already has blood on his hands. The other one probably will have maybe more if he does get elected into office. But that's why, again, Cornel West, Jill Stein, look into the third parties. We got to start getting people that are not into politics, that more have that have integrity into, you know, actually leading the country into better success.
Hey, Malik, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you want to respond to any of that?
Well, I'm for multiple parties, but the way we're set up currently, there's really only two. If you a third party vote is a vote for one of the two party candidates, implicitly and indirectly. And in today's world, I think the people who would cast a vote against Biden because of the Palestinian issue will be rewarding Donald Trump. We say that Joe Biden is complicit. I think that Joe Biden from the start actually has talked about trying to temporize Netanyahu, and I don't see that same level of complicity. I mean, I think the United States has been providing aid to Israel, and a great deal of aid to Israel, for decades through presidencies on both sides of the aisle, and that Joe Biden has essentially inherited that heritage. But my thinking has been, and my observation has been, that Joe Biden has been moving towards temporizing and moderating the Israeli response from day one. So I don't find him as complicit and as at fault. Israel is an independent entity. They are dependent upon us for a great deal of aid, but they have been for decades. That's not something that was initiated by Joe Biden. And I think that Joe Biden has demonstrated an effort at restraint.
All right, let's go to Jack from Merrimack. Good morning to you, Jack. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Well, good morning. First of all, I guess I'd say Netanyahu is essentially a Trump-style dictator. He's going to do what he's going to do, and nothing that Joe Biden can do is going to stop him. And he's made that perfectly clear when Biden said, yeah, we're not going to give you the ability to wipe out an entire hospital with a huge bomb. So there's, you know, I think Biden's doing what he can do. The foreign aid package that Biden signed included $9 billion for humanitarian relief for the Gaza area. And that's an important thing for people to understand. And they don't, I don't think very many people realize that. I also want to say this, though. I think I heard a false equivalency earlier when it was stated that both sides are painting the other as destroyers of democracy. If you take a look at the MAGAs, Republicans, and what they're promising with Project 2025, it's a clear blueprint for destroying this country as a democracy. And I'd ask you, what are Democrats doing to destroy the country? They've even tried to deal with the so-called immigration crisis. Now, if it's such an emergency, why did the Republicans block it? And finally, if people think Project 2025 won't happen if Trump wins, please think about this. There's not one single leading MAGA candidate who has repudiated either of the coup attempts on January 6th in 2021. Most have referred to the violent insurrectionists as so-called patriots and even the convicted felons as hostages. And none of these people, not even one, not even the Never Trumpers, have even mentioned, much less condemned, the attempted political coup involving fraudulent electors. You can be sure that if that had been successful, the MAGAs would have certainly tried to sell it as legal to the rest of America. I mean, this party, as it exists right now, is a wholly owned subsidiary of Trump Incorporated, and they're going to totally toe the line. They are, as somebody pointed out earlier, they're slavish to Trump. They're going to go along with a dictatorship. That's what we're looking at if Trump gets in.
Hey Jack, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you want to respond?
Well, I think I'm the one who he was suggesting had a false equivalency. I wasn't saying that the risk was equal. I was simply saying that the rhetoric was that. Donald Trump is spending all of his time saying that if you elect Joe Biden, that's the end of America as we know it. Is that a reality? No. Is the flip side of that a potential reality? I think so. I would agree that the Project 2025 and all that it promises to do in its many pages is horrifying. And furthermore, all of the other kinds of verbal suggestions about what's going to happen is horrifying. And the mere fact that people won't accept or won't agree to accept the outcome of an election is a tip-off, right? That's the tell, as we would say, as to what it is that's intended. So, you know, I agree with Jack about the horror of it. I'm simply saying that both sides are using this rhetoric, and maybe both sides are believing the words of their leaders. And one side might be credibly believing it, but the other side, I think, is believing it, whether it's credible or not.
All right, let's go to David from San Francisco. Good morning to you, David. Thank you very much for the call. You say what? David, are you there? All right, let's go to Mark from Milwaukee. Good morning to you, Mark. Thank you very much for the call. You say what, sir?
Yeah, good morning. I think you guys are way too kind to Joe Biden as far as how he's handled the Gaza crisis. This is something as of about 2 weeks ago now, he had okayed over 100 arms shipments to Israel. And these are this type of stuff barely makes the newspapers. Let's not forget, we're in month seven. We're in month seven of this. There's nothing practically left of Gaza. No one's even talking about where do these people live afterwards, you know? They're talking about the deaths, which is very significant, of course, but there's no country anymore. So to say that, you know, Trump would be worse for them, I can't imagine being too much worse because there's nothing there. Same with the West Bank. None of our past presidents have stood up to what's going on with the settlements. The Dems have been really weak on this. And, you know, I'm pretty far to the left, and I'm out of patience with the Democrats.
So, again, there's only two parties. You can be out of patience with the Democrats, but, you know, you just about know what you're going to get with the Republican Party. Either you sit it out or you vote for one or the other. You know, one or the other is going to become president of the United States. There is no in between. And I would say there are many issues I totally agree that what is going on in Gaza is unacceptable. I said it from the beginning. I've supported the fact that this continued slaughter of innocent children and women totally unacceptable. And so, but there are all these other issues, you know, that are on the table as well. And so, you know, what are your thoughts? I mean, we can say that that's the one issue, but there's so many other things that are on the docket, I would say, that we have to think beyond one. 844-967-2789. Guys, hang on the line. It's Friday. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show with Sandy Williams.
Heute Morgen, da fand man ihn und da war tot. Liebste, ein Schuss durch das Herz. Können Sie meinen Schmerz verstehen? Ach, verzeihen Sie, ich bin zerstreut. Ja, wussten Sie es nicht die ganze Zeit? Liebste, mein Mann ist verhindert, er kann Sie unmöglich sehen. Ach, verzeihen Sie, ich bin zerstreut. Ja, wussten Sie es nicht?
Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today.
Ethel Waters.
Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable.
All right. Welcome to what I can't believe in the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show with Sandy Williams as my co-host. And this, you know, the conversation has been lively as always. And we can't do this without you. So we're honored that you guys keep listening, keep calling. We're going to keep giving you the platform. We thank Civic Media for that. Let's go to the phone lines and David from San Francisco. Good morning to you, David. You say what? David again. Okay, let's go to Tom from West Allis. Hey, Tom, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
Your last caller was telling how he is getting fed up with Biden and all that. There's only so much Biden can do. He is not the president or whatever prime minister of Israel. That's Netanyahu. Netanyahu is just like Trump, and he has his mindset that he is going to finish the job with or without us. Biden did cut some military assistance to him by shipping, you know, arms and stuff to him. But you also have to realize that Israel has a lot of enemies. And they, if all, for lack of a better term, all hell broke loose, Israel's going to need what they can get. Israel's also fighting a faction who wants Israel wiped off the map. That's all that's to it. That is what Hamas believes. So when you have all these different things, there's only so much Biden can do. And like you guys just said before, Trump did say he would want Netanyahu to finish the job. I mean, and yet we got like the guy from yesterday who said that Trump is slimy, yet he'll still vote for him because Biden is old. That's ridiculous too. Trump is far worse. And even the gentleman you were talking to with the protest, you know, that people don't want to vote for Biden. Well, do you really think if you don't vote for Biden that it's going to get better if Trump gets in? I mean, people just aren't using their heads. And again, there's only so much Biden can do. It is not his fault this happened. I'll go on.
All right. Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to David from San Francisco. Good morning to you, David. You say what?
Oh, third time's a charm. Thanks, Earl, Sandy, and your screener. Yeah, a couple of calls ago, somebody was talking about Trump and the Middle East. And one of the aspects, if you're a fan of Mark Twain, Mark Twain wrote in Innocence Abroad about the Middle East, that it's a tourist haven and that real estate out there is just remarkable. And that everybody in the world would fight over the real estate out there. So you start looking at Donald Trump and Jared Kushner, both real estate developers. They get involved with a corrupt prime minister like Netanyahu, who is quite willing to sell out the Middle East for realtors. And you start looking at whether it's Gaza shorefront property, whether it's the oil underneath Gaza, whether it's Jerusalem proper. It's Mark Twain predicted this, you know, more than a century ago, that real estate was going to be the issue. And in fact, when the United Nations put together the authorization for the creation of Israel, they mandated that Jerusalem was specifically never supposed to be in the management of a single religion, that it was to be an international city so that all of the religions would have a say in the management of Jerusalem. Well, what does Jared Kushner do? He mandates that Israel and the Zionists get to manage it. So Mark Twain predicted this well over a century ago. And the other angle I was going to raise was when you start looking at the Trump pre-planning of January 6th, there are in September of 2020, they already knew that they were going to lose the election. And the phrases that he was using about a rigged election, they were already calculating how they were going to use that that phrase. And in fact, you can even go back into February of 2020. There are videos of Ginny Thomas with an organization doing PR planning for 2020, where they speculate that Trump is going to lose and that the pre-planning of the phrase a rigged election. So they've taken our tax dollars and played them against us. You know, they claim rigged election and used our tax dollars to propound their lie.
Hey, David, thank you very much for the call, as always. Sandy, you want to respond? You know, Sandy, we are at a point where, you know, there's so many things going on. You know, we can talk about what's happening in Gaza, but the people who are struggling and suffering in our own borders, within our own borders, we can talk about what's going on down at the border. You know, we can talk about the inequities that continue to happen in this nation. We can talk about, you know, the climate change. There's so many things going on, Sandy, that if we just focus on one, I think we miss, you know, we kind of miss out on, you know, all the other things.
Well, I think that's one of the problems, is that to formulate the process to get elected president, you end up having to collect a whole bunch of pieces, and each of the pieces has their own interest, and they come to you and say, if you'll follow this path, we're with you. If you don't follow this path, and that's one of the problems we had, you know, for instance, abortion was one of these litmus issues. And the more litmus issues you have, the more difficult it gets to get anything accomplished, number one, and number two, to elect somebody who represents a broad interest. And so I worry about special interests becoming so hyperactive.
You know, Sandy, we got to leave it there. That's Sandy Williams, my co-host. We'll reconnect with him on Tuesday. Calvin, thank you for a great week. Up next, Jane Matinere, Matinere on air, and Greg Bach. Have a great weekend. See you guys on Monday. Today.
Miss Otis regrets she's unable to love.